judges were routinely in a position where he can't choose door number three, which is the perfect parent, you know, a Junior Ward Cleaver or something. Instead, there's only doors number one and two. And the only way that neither one or two, meaning mom or dad, qualify is they have to be really bad.
Life's Third Act is a podcast dedicated to helping you get the most out of your retirement. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Life's Third Act. This week we're going to go back to a discussion we started earlier. Those of you who've seen the Doris Duke episode, I hope that you found that interesting. It was complicated, but it turns out that this family can get more complicated. Mm-hmm. So we told you in that episode that we would later do an episode where we talked about another branch of the family. And this is essentially a half-sibling of Doris Duke. And this half-sibling ends up, of course, having children who have children. And it turns out that these problems don't get simpler over time. They get more complicated. I'll let you kind of set us up, Marley.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about Georgia and Walker Inman. The great niece and nephew of Doris Duke. Mm-hmm. So their father was Walker Inman Jr., which was Doris Duke's nephew, and his father was Walker Inman Sr., who was Doris Duke's half-brother.
Yeah, so this is a little complicated. You'll remember that the patriarch of this family, which is James Buck Buchanan Duke, he was the one who created Duke Energy, this huge company today, multi-billion-dollar company, and many are familiar with the reputation of Duke University, and of course this tobacco fortune that he built, virtually a monopoly over tobacco, and we talked at length about that in a prior episode. So we encourage you, if you've not seen the Doris Duke episode, go back and watch that first. Mm-hmm. I think it's really helpful. So anyway, it turns out that in 1924, while Doris Duke is 12 years old or 10?
Yeah, around 12,
she was very 10. Young. Her father dies. And he has a second wife that has a child from a prior marriage. So the second wife actually outlives her son, which would be the half-sibling of Doris. Mm-hmm. So Nannaline Holt was the mother of Doris Duke, the second wife of James Buchanan Duke. And after James Buchanan's death, she continues to live, Nannaline does, until 1962. Well, she had a child from a prior marriage. And that child died in 1954, but he didn't die before having another child. So his name was Walker. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little confusing here because each of these are Walkers. They're three generations. So I'll let you introduce each of these characters.
Yeah. So there's Walker Inman Sr., and then he is the father of Walker Inman Jr., and then obviously Walker Inman Jr. is the father of Walker Inman Patterson III. And so, you know, it just obviously goes right down the line. But who we're kind of talking about most today and focusing on will be Walker Inman Jr. and Walker Inman Patterson III.
Yeah, so it might help if you look at this diagram, which we're going to be showing on your screen. You can see that you can look at the timeline where we see that the patriarch dies, mother survives, so there are two children, but only one of this patriarch, and that is Doris Duke, and she gets the bulk of the fortune, just so that's clear.
Yeah.
The bulk of James Buchanan Duke's fortune did not go to his wife. It went to probably, you know, certainly the most important thing in his life was Doris Duke.
Yes.
And so he took care of her, though she was a child when he died. There was a trust created, and she lived a long, very wealthy life. Mm-hmm. But as to the wife, she had money, and she got some of the fortune, sufficient to where it grew over time, and it was a sizable fortune in and of itself. Well, she knew Doris, one of her children, was well taken care of. But the child from a prior marriage, which was Walker, she was concerned with him, and we're pretty confident he got the bulk of her fortune. And now remember, since he died before she did, so while she took care of him while he was alive, the fact that he died in 1954, she died in 62. So at the time that she had gone, she knew that he had had a child, and that child was a junior. So this was Walker Jr. So she created a trust, and her intention in creating that trust was to assure, I think, as much that her grandchildren to come would be well taken care of, because she made provision for two generations. Mm-hmm. And the first generation, of course, was her grandson. Remember, her son had died. So the grandson was still relatively young then. So we about, what, 11 years old?
Yeah.
He was born in early 50s. So he was still young, but he was the recipient of this trust where the money could not be simply paid out to him, thankfully. In other words, Nanaline had lawyers who were sufficiently experienced where they advised her to not at any point have these funds simply dispersed to him. However, there was a provision that all the income was to be distributed. So it's called mandatory distribution of income. So whatever this fortune generated, and there's different speculations about how much money it was, because remember, we're talking $1,962. So I've heard everything from, someone said a billion,
yeah.
but in that day's dollars, which was less, you know, it could easily been $300,000 or $400,000. So it was a significant fortune. But it was secured. But unfortunately, Walker had some bad habits. Do you want to talk about that?
Strong roots are essential for a healthy tree, especially your family tree. That's why you work hard to take care of your family every day. At Tucker Allen, we know that taking care of your family means planning for the future. Our team provides personalized estate planning to help you protect your family, your legacy, and your future. From wills and trusts to long-term care and estate planning, count on Tucker Allen, personalized estate planning made simple.
So Walker Sr., he was an alcoholic. He was verbally abusive to his family. He wasn't really the greatest guy. When I was reading a little bit more about just the Duke family in general, James Buchanan, he didn't really want anything to do with Walker. They didn't like each other. They didn't get along. And Walker said, "I don't want your fortune," which is a big reason as to why they had Doris in the first place, because they needed somebody to, he wanted somebody to take that fortune.
And he probably wanted his own heir,
yes.
His own blood,
yes.
So to speak.
So Walker didn't want anything to do with the family money. He obviously had his mom's whenever that got passed down to him. But he, you know, he was just kind of angry. He was an alcoholic. He abused drugs. And that did just live on throughout the family, as we'll kind of get into.
And then he died of consumption.
Yes, tuberculosis.
Yeah. So a bit of a tragic life, but he wasn't entirely dissolute. He did accumulate some assets, but because the money was distributed to him pretty generously, and we'll find out to his child, mm-hmm. Through Nanaline's provisions and her trust, that can be a bad thing. It can put too much money in the hands of some people who are inclined to be self-destructive. It's, you know, often we don't know what the personalities of our children will be later on, and certainly not grandchildren that are not born. So in this case, Nanaline made provisions for her son, but her son dies, so she instead focuses on what will be her grandson, mm-hmm. who is alive, young, and she knows or hopes there will be grandchildren. So she makes provision for two generations. So now let's shift gears and talk about Walker Jr.
Yeah, so Walker Jr. is obviously the son of Walker Sr. His father passed when he was 2, and then his mother got remarried pretty quickly and had his half-sister, Susan. And then his mother died, like, about 10 years later, I believe, and then Walker kind of got passed around from house to house. His mother had even written in her will that she wanted Walker to go with her sister, Caroline, but that didn't happen. And surprisingly enough, Walker Jr. actually ended up with Doris Duke, living on her estates, which we didn't really talk about in the Doris Duke episode, but that wasn't something that was necessarily highlighted in, you know, her life. She wanted kids, but I don't think she ever really saw Walker Jr. as a child of her own.
Yeah.
But when Doris passed, she actually left Walker a $7 million trust fund. So now he has his father's money, his grandmother's money, and his aunt's money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a difficult situation. You know, remember that when this child's probably 2 years old, which is Walker, the senior. Mm-hmm. So when he's like 2 years old, his dad dies. Then 10 years or so later, his grandmother, who primarily took responsibility, dies. He's still young. So he was passed around. So mm-hmm. he had an unstable childhood. You know, so he had a lot of money. There wasn't any shortage of people who were willing to take care of him. But you know, people who have monetary incentives, it often doesn't end up as well as if you can find somebody who's really devoted. So, yeah, I think Doris, by her nature, was not inclined to.
No.
She wasn't the mothering
and
type.
He, I think, to only kids that she really, like, found as her own specifically, like kids that, because you obviously remember she got pregnant and she was all about that. She really wanted to be a mom then, but then she had a miscarriage and that kind of went from there. So I'm wondering if that, I can't remember if the years line up, but I'm wondering if that kind of, you know, pushed her away from being a mother figure to Walker Jr. Thinking it may have, but he also had kind of a reputation on her estates as a pyrotechnic. So he would really just light a whole bunch of stuff on fire. He got into anything that he could. He wasn't the most well-behaved kid because nobody was around to parent him either.
Yeah. So in a case like that, it's not surprising that Junior doesn't turn out well.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, becomes a parent of these twins that we're going, that's really the focus of the show. But if you think about it, these twins didn't have a chance. If they were looking to him as a role model for parenting, he had no experience with that, very unstable childhood, et cetera. And he had the personal problems that his dad had.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know when the drug use started, for which I guess Junior is primarily going to be known. He had drug and alcohol problems. He ultimately died of mm-hmm. an overdose of methadone.
Yep.
Yeah, so he had had a long history of treatment. He'd been in and out of facilities, at least one. I don't know how inclined he was to get treatment. Then he marries someone who probably wasn't the healthiest influence on him, mm-hmm. nor he her. But they married in what year, around 2000?
It was around 2000,
yeah. Daisha?
So Daisha was his first wife, and they married in 1996. She's the mother of the twins. The twins were born in 1997. So him and Daisha kind of had a whirlwind romance. They actually met in 1983, and they traveled around the world for 2 years together. And then he proposed something that she didn't like, and I won't really mention it because it's not something yeah. that is worth mentioning, but
they had a debauched life.
Yes.
Yeah, let's
yes.
just say that.
But she said no, and he ended things right then and there, and they broke up. And then about 10 years later, they met up in New Orleans, and they got married. You know, it was, I believe, in 1995 they met up again, and then they got married in 1996, so a year later.
So she was supposed to have been a topless dancer at one point?
Yeah. Before she met him, I believe she was for a majority of her life. And then they met, and then I guess he took care of her for a little bit while she had the twins. But that marriage went downhill fairly quickly after the twins because they got divorced in 1990. They got divorced in 2000.
Yeah, and part of the problem, and one of the things I think that fueled all this chaos, was the fact that money was subject to this spray provision. That's a term that's used in estate planning. You can have a provision where a trustee is told to sprinkle, meaning the trustee is given discretionary power as to whether or not to distribute money or not, and they can choose to sprinkle it based upon how they think it's needed. And then you have other provisions for trustees in which it's called a spray provision where, and there are reasons for this, but it has to be used with caution. In this case, Nana Lean had a provision in which this money was to be distributed. That's the reason I use the word spray versus sprinkle. Is it was whenever money was generated, earnings had to be distributed. Now, we don't know all that it tells of these trusts. And so many of you who watch this show regularly, you hear this a lot. And it's just, you know, in a way, it's one of the advantages. Definitely, it's one of the advantages of trust. But it's not good when you're trying to put together the pieces on the outside for people who are interested and want to learn what mistakes were made or just curious, because you there's no mechanism legally to find out the contents of a private trust unless you're a beneficiary. Mm-hmm. If you're a beneficiary or a person of interest, quote unquote, interested person, which is that can include a trustee, a former trustee, a few other categories, person with a claim as a beneficiary. But if you're not in that very narrow category, you don't have any access to this information. So this is one of the handicaps we're offering under. What we do know is that there were lawsuits filed of various sorts relating to these trusts over the years, as there always are at this plateau of assets. So we know then that there were provisions such as this one about the provision ordering it to spray. So mm-hmm. there were periods of time during the 90s and I guess going back in the 80s in which there was $350,000 plus a year that was being paid out. Ordered, it had to be paid out for the trust. The trustee was instructed, mandatory, to pay out the earnings. There are reasons you want a mandatory distribution, it's called. But there are a lot of reasons to not do that. And it does keep the trust from accumulating too much money. Sometimes, maybe for tax reasons and other reasons, sometimes people will create a dynasty trust. It's going to be multi-generational, and they'll have a provision that you know, we want this trust to last a long time. We want principal preserved, but you need to distribute the income. In this case, here was somebody who had just a very addictive personality, mm-hmm. ultimately died of his drug addiction, and he was being fed all this money. And he had enough money to where I'm afraid there was no one around him who really cared.
Yeah, I mean, don't.
You don't know at that level. Is somebody who's around you, are they there because you are this recipient of a trust?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And I think that's kind of why the marriage fell apart. In my head, you know, I want it to be this whirlwind romance where everybody's fine. But it wasn't really long after they had the twins that everything just kind of started to crumble. The relationship started to get abusive and he went for full custody after they divorced and got it from Daisha. Daisha hardly ever saw her kids up until Walker Jr. passed.
So we'll try to repeat some of these things as we talk about it so it's clear. So the kids are these twins, and this is the focus kind of this, where this fortune winds down finally, is they were born in 97. Mm-hmm. So their parents get divorced in 2000. Mm-hmm. So like 3 years later, there's a custody battle. And talk a little more about that.
Yeah, so there was a big custody battle. Obviously, Walker had a lot of money. Walker Jr. had a lot of money, and Daisha didn't really have anything. He kept a lot from her because I think that's just how the trust had been set up also. So she walked away from the divorce not having a whole lot, but she fought and fought and fought, and he just kind of created false narratives, well, supposedly false narratives about her. And he had a lot of people come to his aid and say, oh, he's a great father, Daisha's a terrible mother. And then nannies in the household also told some stories about, you know, allegations of abuse from both sides. And I think it just kind of wound down to who can give the kids monetarily maybe the best life. And it was their father. And
you're right. I mean, the choice, when I was practicing domestic relations, you know, judges were routinely in a position where he can't choose door number three, which mm-hmm. is the perfect parent, you know, a Junior Ward Cleaver or something. Instead, there's only doors number one and two. And the only way that neither one or two, meaning mom or dad, qualify is they have to be really bad. Mm-hmm. In other words, the bar is low. And at first you think, oh, that's not a good thing. But I think we want to believe that the government is not empowered to readily take our children away and give them to somebody who can do a better job. So in a way, it is a good thing. I think it's the lesser evil to have a provision where, you know, for a court to take away children from a natural parent, there has to be a darn good reason. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the darn good reason test. And usually, and this is certainly a case, not usually, but not rarely, you have a situation where you have two candidates and the judge has to choose one of the candidates, like voting for a presidential election in recent times. So you have to choose between one of these candidates. And so in this case, the judge chose the dad, but he had a lot of flaws. And we find this out. The kids talk now. Now, we have to discount for kids' exaggeration or whatnot, but we don't know that it tells. We just know it wasn't good. We're talking Dr. Phil material, right?
Yes, yeah.
They were literally on Dr.
Yeah,
Phil?
Yeah, they went on Dr. Phil in 2020.
So, I mean, clearly there was a lot of stuff that went on that shouldn't have. And neither of these parents, I don't think, is a candidate for Parent of the Year. But you'll not be surprised to hear that after the divorce, Walker Jr. Gets remarried. Mm-hmm. And he actually, it appears, could choose somebody that might even be worse than the first. He chooses somebody who had been a couple of convictions for drug-related offenses. She had lots of problems. These problems continued after their marriage in 03?
Their marriage was in 01, so 01. Just a year after divorce.
1 year after. Yeah. So 1 year after. So you suspect this was going on probably, and that's probably underlay some of the conflict in the divorce. So just so this is clear, the custody battle was ugly. So during this custody battle, I guess he's dating this woman, and it probably was a subject, I'm guessing, knowing what I know about domestic relations custody cases, I suspect that she came up in that litigation. It went on for a long time. It was very expensive. I'm sure he paid for all the lawyers, because typically in domestic relations, the court will assign the expense to whoever can bear it, unless there's some wrongdoing or bad faith or something. But in this case, wrongdoing probably spreads somewhat equally. So I suspect there was lots of money to pay lawyers, and $350,000 a year, at least, probably he's receiving annually. So I suspect this custody battle went on for over 4 or 5 years. He wins the custody. He's married this woman at this point. The stories that went on after are, those are things that the kids talk about primarily because they were older and they kind of know what's going on. Keep in mind, they were born in 97. 97?
Yes.
So they were at a point where they're more cognizant of what's happening. So part of the problem here, too, is that there was this provision that called for a mandatory payout. So Junior had a lot of money to spend, mm-hmm. and it's a shame because, you know, doubtlessly it helped, you know, undo him sooner and perhaps to a degree that he never would have maybe had if there had been some stop on his ability to access drugs and other things and to get his way generally, which people that kind of money, unfortunately, that they tend to get their way in a lot of ways. Even law enforcement, others often turn their eye. When his wife was arrested or pulled over with the kids in the car, she was intoxicated, had drug possession.
She told she was swerving all over the road. This was in June 2007, so the kids would have been 10. She was swerving all over the road, and the police pulled her over. And her name's Daryl Lee also. But the police pulled her over, and Daryl Lee said that she had only smoked some marijuana earlier, which obviously in 2007 had been still highly illegal. And they were like, okay, get out. We're going to check your vehicle, especially since you had kids in the car. Well, they didn't find just marijuana. They found heroin, methadone, and I believe pills that weren't prescribed to her.
So long story short, she didn't get any jail term.
No.
And to our knowledge, she didn't lose her license.
Nope.
It's just, I'm convinced this wouldn't have happened this way if it had been one of us.
Yeah.
So these names I know are confusing because Daryl Lee is a similar name to Daisha. And so Daisha's the first wife. The second is Daryl Lee. So Walker Jr.'s life comes to an end in 2010. So 2010, he dies of the methadone overdose. The children at that point are, what, 13 or
yes,
so?
13.
They're twins, remember. Guess who gets custody at that point? Not Daryl Lee. She's stepmom. Stepmom virtually never has a claim. Mm-hmm. It's unusual because there's a deference in virtually all states for a parent to have access to their kids. And sometimes that can produce, you know, bad results. In this case, it probably was better than Daryl Lee.
Yeah.
But in any case, it was somebody who had not been active during much of the children's life, in part because of the order, the custody order. During periods of time, there was restrictions, supervision, and other orders that limited her access. But now she has access not just to the children. She becomes the lawful guardian of the children by virtue of being a parent. And the result is that she has access to the money. The money that's paid doesn't get paid directly to the kids, right? They're minors. So it comes to her. So this trust now, that is the last segment of the grandmother's desire to provide for her children, which has a value. It was, again, we don't know. So you end up with wild estimates. It was believed for a long time that it was $1 billion. Mm-hmm. That was what was reported in press and Forbes and other places.
Yeah.
But soon, when litigation came, as it always does, and this there was, we'll talk a little more about the litigation in a minute, it appeared that there was actually much less money than they thought. Long story short, they think that it was around $60 million, mm-hmm. probably, that was ultimately available for the kids, maybe a little less after some money was spent thereafter. But remember, the kids are to get whatever's left at age 21. Mm-hmm. So soon after this death, the death of Junior, immediately there's litigation over the estate. And Daryl Lee has a good claim. I mean, she's actually the beneficiary of most of the assets of the estate. There was a trust that was created that included the children. So interesting that Junior had the foresight, certainly had the money.
Yeah.
He had the foresight to make a provision of his own for a revocable trust with a will. And that's what, you know, many people will do. Middle class, lower middle class, maybe even poor will sometimes have a trust and a will. So it's a standard device. We don't know, again, the terms of it. We only know that the will had a provision. Remember, will's public, so we can always know what's in a will. The will had a provision that whatever assets went into the estate would go directly into that trust and be distributed according to the terms of the trust. So we know that Daryl Lee got a good portion of the estate, but we also know there were some assets left for the kids. We don't know how much. We can be pretty confident that given Junior's condition at the time, there probably wasn't a lot of money floating around. Though he had hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars that came through his hands, we just don't know what was left. But Daryl Lee was the primary beneficiary. The kids were also had a share and were to be paid out through the trust. The litigation went on for a long time about who was to be the guardian, the custodian of the kids. So Daryl Lee actually made, you know, she had the money to spend, I guess. So there was litigation over who was going to control the assets of the children. And that's kind of a shame because you have a suspicion that this is less about child welfare.
Yeah, Daryl Lee even sued Daisha for defamation throughout all of the other lawsuits. But I'm thinking for Daryl Lee at the bare minimum, and I mean for Daryl Lee at the bare minimum, it definitely wasn't about the kids. And then for Daisha, I think it was about the kids at first, and then once she got that money and a taste of it, it wasn't so much anymore.
Yeah, and Daryl Lee was custodian over what assets that Junior had access to, and while it's true that this is a little confusing, I know. While it's true that being the mother of the child and the caregiver of the child, it does mean that the money passes through your hands typically, but it doesn't mean that that's the person who acts as the trustee to distribute the money from the trust. Mm-hmm. That's whoever you want to appoint if you have a trust. So if you have an in-law who survives, a mother, and maybe your son has died, for example, you can have whatever trustee you want in charge of the money. It's just that when it's paid out, you don't hand money to children. You hand it to the caregiver, to the person in whose custody it is. And so it ends up in the hands of mom. But still, at the source, it's controlled by the trustee. Mm-hmm. So you had this weird relationship where Daryl Lee was appointed to manage these assets. And she's also appointed in the will to be the personal representative in the will. So there was litigation went on for, it even was cross-state. There was arguments over jurisdiction between Wyoming and maybe
South Carolina.
And also Utah was involved. Mm-hmm. So you can see lawyers make a lot of money in these cases, and they did in this one. So one thing, though, that we do need to talk a little bit about is the role of the trustee. The trustee that was appointed by Nana Lean, wise as she was, she clearly, you know, had access to a lot of money for a long time. And of course, she had learned a lot, doubtlessly, from her husband's lawyers and her lawyers. So she had in, except for the thing about the mandatory distribution, that's something you generally don't want. But in other ways, you know, it was well planned. One thing that I will give her credit for that was hugely important in this case is she appointed as a primary decision maker a trustee that was corporate. So she appointed J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan, one thing to understand about corporate trustees, and this is huge, even if you don't have a lot of money, don't think this only applies to if you're rich. You do have to have a significant amount, meaning a couple million to where you can justify a little bit of additional cost whenever you have a reliable corporate trustee. Mm-hmm. But the corporate trustee was being very tight-fisted in some ways with Daisha because they felt that Daisha couldn't be trusted with Nana Lean's money. And remember, that's where the bulk of the fortune is the trust created by Nana Lean, not by Junior. So that money came at play when Daisha was complaining that she wasn't getting enough money to raise these kids. She's saying the kids are suffering because she can't get enough money. And J.P. Morgan, they're doing their job and they are suspicious of her. They're determined to protect the source. And that's when it started to look like there's not $1 billion here because there wouldn't be this level of litigation if they're trying to preserve money. Remember, the trustee can always be sued. And if you're a corporate trustee, you have deep pockets. You have insurance. And that means that if you mismanage money, then the kids, these at the time when you're managing their money, maybe they're 10 years old. They're harmless, right? But when they become adults, if that trust fund is empty and you've given it to their custodian or their legal representative, whoever that might be, could be just the parent, if you've handed the money over to them and it's been wasted, guess who's responsible? The trustee's responsible. So J.P. Morgan and all these large, all trust companies know this. And most are very fastidious about assuring that the money they pay out, they can defend when that child becomes an adult. Because believe me, these children do sue trustees all the time. So that's what's going on in the background when you read about this litigation and you're thinking, why doesn't the trust company just cut a check? And used to, they did that. But in the modern world, there's such litigation. For the most part, they don't just cut a check. In this case, Daisha was spending a lot of money. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, she was complaining about the trustees once. And she was saying, you know, like they gave Walker Jr. all of this money and they were just basically enabling an addict, but they can't give money to her and the kids. Well, what she was referring to was she made a sudden move from South Carolina to I believe
Wyoming?
It was Park City. Yeah.
Oh, to Utah.
Yeah,
okay.
To Utah. And the trustees weren't aware of it. And so they couldn't fund anywhere for them to live at the time. So Daisha thought it would be a good idea to go get a suite at like a really nice hotel. And the bill was coming out to around $120,000 a month. And Daisha was upset that they wouldn't cover it. And then she said that they were giving them the bare minimum because they had to immediately find a place to rent. And then between, you know, like skiing season and all kinds of other stuff, they were just barely getting by.
Well, didn't the New Yorker report that she demanded $50,000 for Christmas
kids? Christmas presents, yes.
And these are two kids, not 20 kids.
Yeah.
I mean, she really spent a ton of money, and she had been used to that. Remember, she was with Junior, Walker mm-hmm. Jr. before their divorce. So she was used to just a lot of profligate waste. And J.P. Morgan, just as Nataline, I think, would have, she'd have smiled if she could, from above perhaps. She's thinking, this is what I wanted to happen. I wanted the trustee to stop somebody, whether it's an in-law or one of my descendants, from making bad decisions that waste this fortune. Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, incidentally, J.P. Morgan was justified in these decisions. So I didn't see any case circumstances where they lost these cases, but she took them to court complaining that they refused to give her all the money she wanted. Mm-hmm. But they had good lawyers too, and they were in their rights, and this is one of the beauties of a trust.
The kids also took them to court for funding their father when he had an addiction and saying that they funded his addiction and so on and so forth.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a good point. Let me mention that. So one reason we know that this is a mandatory distribution, remember, the terms of the trust, again, are not published. The reason that I could say that to you is because of the case you just described, is that we know from the filings in court that when the children sued, saying, and this was at the time they sued, did they sue, have a guardian sue on their behalf?
I don't believe so. I believe it was when they
older,
reached, yeah,
age
the
18.
Age.
Yeah. So, and the kids now are 26. We'll come to that in a minute. So, the kids, as soon as they reach age of majority, they file an action. And the court ruled in favor of the trustee. Mm-hmm. And they said, look, yeah, that there was a lot of money that was handed out that probably should have been kept in the trust. But it had to be. The terms of the trust called for a mandatory distribution. And so depending on what assets it is, if you have assets that are, that I mean, like some types of real estate will throw off a whole lot of income. Other assets don't throw off a lot of income. But she may have even had a provision that required a minimum. So it means that even if you had assets that weren't throwing off income, but they're still valuable and appreciating in value, like say a piece of land that mm-hmm. had oil under it, until it's drilled and sold, you're not generating any income. But that asset could be going up 10, 15% a year. So under those circumstances, you might have very little income. So it's not unusual to have a provision that calls for a minimum. But we do know that there was a provision for mandatory distribution of earnings. And it did. It was a hose. It was a fire hose where money was blown out. We don't know how much each year. We know there were years of 350. I mentioned that number because we know that a number of years it was that. And we're talking about in the 80s. So there was just a lot of waste. And I can see the kids thought, surely the trustee has to do something to stop it. Mm-hmm. The trustee has to follow the instructions of the person that's called the settlor, the person that creates the trust. And you know, there was this decision was made about a grandchild that she didn't know at the time. And the fact is, she didn't know, you know, what these great-grandchildren would be like. She couldn't even know what her grandchild was going to mm-hmm. be like, Junior. I mean, he was young at the time. So it's often a mistake to take away the discretion of the trustee. The best way to fix that is to have a provision where you do give the trustee discretion. And you may, some of you may think, but I don't know, can I trust their discretion? What if they abuse their discretion? Well, there is a cause of action for that, meaning if these children say there had been a discretionary provision rather than mandatory, and there hadn't been enough money paid out for them to have a comfortable luxury lifestyle, that would have been an abuse of discretion. Now, comfortable luxury just means consistent with their fortune. It doesn't mean that, you know, they're to spend money like, you know, like it's water. And that's what happened early on with the mandatory payout. So anyway, that's something that I would have been better for everyone concerned. And perhaps it would have been different. But the other provision that I think was a bad decision that was included in the trust was that it was to be distributed to these great grandkids when they turned age
21.
So that you all know if you watch this show very much.
Don't do that.
Now, we don't know, though, that it tells. So the kids are age 26 now.
Yeah.
What do we know?
We barely know anything about them. Then a Rolling Stones article that I read, basically, and this was a couple years ago, Walker the Third was saying that all he wanted to do ever was just fish out in South Carolina at their family plantation. And then Georgia was saying that she just wanted a slow, soft life. So I'm not really sure. I couldn't find a whole lot on them now. I think they kind of stay out of the press. But we know that they got money. We know that there was a time that the trustees stopped paying for their schooling because it was too much and there wasn't enough. So they kind of handled all of that. And
really?
After that, yeah, they just kind of fell off the grid.
Yeah, I didn't see that. And that really indicates that the money had, it was probably substantially less than $60
million. Yeah.
And which would have been, if it were $60 million, it'd be $30 million apiece that would be distributed at age 21. Mm-hmm. Remember, they're twins, so it would all be distributed at one time. But it sounds like there was quite a bit less.
Yeah. Their school was $20,000 a month, too. Their college, I don't know if that was for both or for just one of them, but
that must have had them living in a private suite somewhere off campus or
something.
Yeah. Yeah, see, any demands they're going to make, it's going to be consistent with the lifestyle that they've seen in the family. Mm-hmm. And the trustees have to make tough calls. And when, you know, when the gas tank's getting low, they have to decide what measures can we take to make this last longer.
Yeah. And nobody in the family, it's surprising that, with Walker Jr., it's not, but it's kind of surprising to me that the kids don't have bigger names because they're trying to make more money for the trust or, you know, for their future kids or anything like that. But they might just be living off of it and calling it what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's good news that they're not in the news.
Yeah, I guess it is.
I mean, when you have a 21-year-old heir of a fortune that's in the news, it's almost never good. So, and they have this long lineage that I think about that, you know, their grandfather had drug and alcohol problems. Their dad had terrible problems in that area. And you know, you wonder whether they're going to be able to have good, healthy, productive, happy lives. So we can only hope that they will.
Yeah.
So far, so good, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, I hope that this was helpful to you. Granted, this is a little complicated, lots of layers here, lots of generations and dates and whatnot, but it was worth sorting through because I think that there's an opportunity to learn something. There are lessons, even for us who don't have fortunes, but it's also pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So there's some life lessons as well as financial and estate planning lessons. So we hope you enjoyed it and learned something. This has been another episode of Life's Third Act. Till next time, take care.
You've been listening to Life's Third Act, a podcast for thriving in retirement, sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. Each week, we discuss topics and answer questions to help you better plan for your future. For more information, visit tuckerallen.com. Subscribe and listen again next week for another edition of Life's Third Act. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.